Nelson.
Stop badgering me with your $10 words.
7 years of college down the drain.
I figured out what to do with our sinner children.
There's no crying in baseball!
Boy, this sounds like more trouble than a moose on the interstate.
From his reserved seats high above the evangelical circus, this is a voice of sanity in search of a Jesus-shaped Christianity. Sending dispatches from the post-evangelical wilderness to whomever is on the same journey, you are now part of Internet Monk Radio with your host, the Internet Monk, Michael Spencer.
I whisper things into your head and you hear the words, but you don't believe me.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Internet Monk Radio, podcast number 103. You are now on board the Internet's longest-running theological soap opera, and if you will pick up your script, you will discover that you have a lot more lines than you did last week. Glad to have you and many other pilgrims in the evangelical wilderness along for today's podcast. Well, if you have been listening to the podcast the last few weeks, you know that almost every one of them I have prefaced by saying this is a sabbatical podcast. But today, I can say sabbatical is over. Very sad words. Sabbatical is over for your Internet Monk. And I want to say thank you again to the Louisville Institute and encourage all of you, particularly those of you that are maybe from more conservative denominations, like the Southern Baptists or those sorts of people, to check out the Louisville Institute's webpage. If you've been in pastoral ministry for more than 10 years and you believe that you might be able to put together a sabbatical, you should try it. They encourage me every time we correspond to encourage you to do that. So I'm doing that. Also want to tell you just about some of the folks that are sponsors and some of the folks that we just like to put in front of the audience. NewReformationPress.com is our sponsor at Internet Monk, and they have all sorts of Reformation theology gifts and resources that you'll want to check out. If you are into Reformation theology, you will want to go to PirateChristianRadio.com. where Issues Etc. has now found a new home, along with a lot of other really great Lutheran broadcasts, Lutheran preaching, back programs of the White Horse Inn, PirateChristianRadio.com, and I am greatly benefiting these days from the God Journey. The God Journey. And those are some of the brothers that were involved in bringing the Shack to the evangelical world. One of these days, want to do a whole podcast on the Shack, if possible. Well, returning to the world of my normal ministry job is going to be a slow process. Thankfully, we are in a major, well, we're in summer school, actually, but just a few days left, so I'm not taking over any responsibilities. The folks who have been watching the store for me are going to take care of things for this summer. I will be back at full swing and full work mode the 14th of August. So I have some time transitioning back from sabbatical into work. One of the things that I'm really concerned about is bringing the whole concept of the Sabbath into my life in a meaningful way. Sabbatical really helped me with that, really helped me to understand the concept of sabbatical and the concept of Sabbath. And if you have never read Abraham Heschel's book, The Sabbath, tiny little book. Heschel was a very prominent Jewish writer, Jewish scholar of the 20th century. You want to do that. There's a lot of other good resources about the Sabbath out there. I believe Mark Buchanan has a book. But I want to bring that into what I do. And I don't just mean taking a day off, but I mean this idea of finding this place for God, this place where God is valued, where God is treasured, and where God and his goodness are simply enjoyed. Bringing that right in the middle of what normally sort of think of as the stressful work environment. That will be one of the responsibilities I have for the gift that I have been given. And one of the things I'm going to have to deal with as I go back to work is my loathing of voicemail. I really dislike voicemail, which we use all the time here where I work. And of course, as a school, we have to have it for some things. There's a lot of practical uses for it, but I want to go on record as saying that we use voicemail way too much, and about 75% of what comes around on voicemail would be far better to be put on email, where we could have the content in front of us in a way that is readable and respondable, that's arranged, you have some sense of what the point is. So many times on voicemail, people just go on and on and on, they're kind of thinking through pros and cons, and sometimes they're mad, and you get a lot of emotion in there that doesn't need to be in there, and then you don't have anything that's actual copy that you can file away. All you can do is just store it as an old voicemail message, and I think it's an enormous waste of time to have to sort through voicemail. I'd much rather look at a document. So, hey, world out there, anybody who can make a difference, anybody who cares, let's use email. Let's send each other documents. Let's kind of keep the voicemail to a minimum. I am really no fan of voicemail. One of the things that, one of the little technological innovations that I just assumed we didn't have around. Well, I am very much looking forward to two interviews that are coming up at Internet Monk. And I know sometimes I have promised interviews that didn't show up, but I'm confident of these two. I'm going to be interviewing the author of Jesus the Pastor, John Fry, in just a few days. Jesus the Pastor is a book that obviously I'm very interested in because of my new blog, Jesus Shaped Spirituality, which you can find at jesusshaped.wordpress.com. John Fry has a blog called Jesus the Radical Pastor. He wrote Jesus the Pastor in 2000. I have lots of things I want to ask John. I want to ask him if Jesus founded an institution or a movement. I want to ask him if he believes that the contemporary pastorate is basically all about just perpetuating the conventional wisdom. I want to ask him if he believes, as I do, that the imitation of the methodology of Jesus and the spirituality of Jesus is of greater importance now than it's ever been. So I have lots of things I'm going to ask John Fry, author of Jesus the Pastor. And I'm working on an interview with Frank Viola. Frank Viola, author of Pagan Christianity, has a new book coming out in August we'll be talking about. I've got a post on Pagan Christianity I'm in the process of writing. Been a lot of pretty negative reviews of this quite controversial book that Viola wrote with George Barna. I'm interested in this book, not so much in the quality of the historical research or some of the other things that have been critiqued, but I'm very interested in this idea of taking a critical eye towards the things that have come to us through history. Frank and I probably come out at some different places on this, but this idea of taking a critical eye towards how these things became so important to us. I'm really not concerned about where they came from, because I know that Christians, you know, sort of suck up and use everything, historically and culturally speaking. But the assumption we have that this is all biblical and that this is all important, you know, just to use an example, in the church that I grew up with, wearing a tie was really important. Short hair was really important. Public invitation, very, very important. I mean, church split, run you off, make you mad, Jesus is all upset about this kind of important. And I think Frank does us a real favor there by saying, you know, we should realize that the things that we've accumulated, and that's something we post-evangelicals talk about a lot, the things that we've accumulated are exactly that. They're the things that we have accumulated. Now, I would say that the case for the organic house church that Frank makes is not as compelling as he makes it, particularly having to lean so much on 1 Corinthians. I think if you look at the overall biblical and first century evidence, you see a lot of diversity and a lot of simplicity. And both those things, I think, are good. Those may be quibbles, but I'm looking forward to both of those interviews. And this whole idea of the conventional wisdom, I hope that you will think about just how often what we're doing in religion is just the same things over and over again, hoping to get a different outcome. And I believe that's the definition of mental illness, isn't it? Doing the same thing over and over and anticipating a different outcome. And I think the reason we do things over and over again without really thinking about them is there is this sort of conventional wisdom addiction. It's very strong among pastors and leaders, but it's just strong among religious Christians in general. And it gets down to all sorts of things that we do, and we don't know why we're doing them. We do them, and we know that very little, if any, spiritual growth happens. We know that it's just sort of going through the motions. It's almost entirely external. We convince ourselves that the Spirit is at work, but we really don't have any evidence that the Holy Spirit is at work. And what happens is we accumulate a kind of person in leadership who's just very good on selling us on this idea that, okay, this is the way Southern Baptists do church. And if you do it differently, you're wrong. The old paths, the tried and true. Now, I'm not just trying to sell anybody on the idea of innovation. There's a lot of stupid innovations and a lot of bad innovations. And many of the things that we need to recover are old things. But, you know, those are things that conventional wisdom for a lot of Christians throw out, too. You know, why are so many people hostile to the Apostles' Creed? Why are we so hostile to ideas like the Christian year? Man, I had a woman at Cornerstone who just absolutely was all over me about the Christian year, just the rank evil of it. And I said, well, you know, this isn't the 67th book of the Bible. Scripture doesn't command it. But Israel had a redemption story-centered calendar, and it had value for them. And it included things not mentioned in the Bible. You know, Hanukkah's not in the Bible. The event is. The festival's not. And we know that Jesus kept Hanukkah, and having a prudent use of the Christian year so that we are forming our worship around Christ and the story of Christ in the gospel, in the gospel text, use of the lectionary, another one. These are things, they're not innovations, they're reaching back into the past, but they bust the conventional wisdom being that Brother Billy Bob will tell us every week what's important, and the pastoral leadership team will lead us to grow, and growing is of course very important, and facilities are very important. And let me show you what happens when the conventional wisdom goes out the window. Over at Jesus Shaped Spirituality, I've got a link to a story of Jared Wilson's community. He never calls it a church, worshiping community Element, which is located in Nashville. And to make a long story short, you can read the link for yourself. To make a long story short, they have decided as a community of young evangelicals to give away to missions and church planting 60% of the money that comes into their community, and to run their community, salaries, insurance, facilities, and so forth, on 40%. And they are doing this in imitation of what some other evangelicals are doing. Now, I've got to tell you, that's busting the conventional wisdom. The conventional wisdom is you can't do that, and I don't know if it'll be feasible for them to do it or not. We'll find out. But I have a feeling they're not only going to do it, but they'll attract a lot of people in the process, and it will be very validating that what they're doing is serious about Jesus, because even pagans understand that Jesus makes a major difference in economic discipleship. Christians don't seem to understand it. But pagans do understand it, and the reason that we don't think that way, let's give away our resources as Western Christians to fund, you know, missions and church planning. The reason that it sounds so weird when we hear that a church is going to do that is simply because we are so submerged in the conventional wisdom and so involved with people who keep that agenda of tame, safe, self-serving Christianity right in front of us. When somebody comes along with something that's very much in line with what we can picture Jesus doing, well, it sounds weird. It sounds like they lost their mind over there, you know? And I don't know if they lost their mind or not, but they are doing something that's a great encouragement to me. I'll tell you, if I lose my job, Jared, I'm on my way to Nashville, brother. Don't know if I have much money to give, but I can certainly sit in there and say amen to that sort of thing. So, hey, let's not get addicted to the conventional wisdom, okay? All right, well, we're going to come back here in just a minute. We're going to talk a little bit about three critiques of evangelicalism appeal to me as a post-evangelical, and we'll get into some of that in just a moment. Okay, if you were around for podcast number 102, then you know what I'm doing. If you weren't, then you don't. What I'm doing is I'm sharing with you some very abbreviated parts of the seminars I taught at Cornerstone 08, and we are in the second part of the seminar, Dispatches from the Evangelical Wilderness. Last time we talked about what is the evangelical wilderness, how did some of us get in it, what are we going to do now that we are in there? And we ended up with Thomas Merton's idea that I will try to bridge in myself a lot of these differences, different traditions, different sources of encouragement in being an evangelical, that I don't have to change churches or change traditions, that I can reach back and go deeper and go across the fences and the walls I've told that I'm not supposed to go across in order to forge a post-evangelicalism that's deeper and richer. Now I want to talk about three critiques of evangelicalism that make a lot of sense to me, that appeal to me. And let me say immediately that there are far more critiques than the three I'm dealing with. In fact, if I had unrestricted time, I would have dealt with evangelicals and the culture war and what this whole culture war obsession is doing to us and the effect that it's having on us. I also would like to talk about the prosperity gospel, which goes a lot deeper than the most blatant practitioners of it. The prosperity gospel is all over evangelicalism. I watched a TV broadcast from one of the largest Southern Baptist churches in the South yesterday, and the name of the show was Winners. Well, what's that an appeal to? I mean, that's an appeal to one of the things that the prosperity gospel speaks to, that is this sense that you're not successful. So, three critiques of evangelicalism. The first of those critiques is a French Catholic theologian, converted Protestant, by the name of Louis Boyer. If you're from Kentucky, it's Louis Boyer. Louis Boyer, and the book is called The Spirit and Forms of Protestantism. Now listen, Boyer's critique is pretty sophisticated in detail. I don't really have time to go into it here, and you need to read it. It is without a doubt the most sophisticated and appealing critique of Protestantism that I know of. Boyer didn't know a thing about evangelicalism, and everything that he said is amplified in what we're going through in evangelicalism right now. Basically, Boyer said that everything the Protestant Reformation was really looking for was there in Roman Catholicism. It may have been obscured, it may have been lost, but it was there and it is there. And the things that the Protestant Reformation stresses, which Boyer is very, very generous to say are good things. Experience with God, God-centeredness, love of the Word, salvation by grace through faith, with love in its proper place. These things are all in Catholicism. These are all good things that Protestantism wanted, but cut off from the Catholic tradition, cut off from the Catholic Church, Boyer says, Protestantism becomes a self-destructive, self-consuming movement. And he very much centers in on Calvin. Calvin taking out the liturgy and replacing it with practically nothing. Calvin taking the pulpit and making it the center of everything, whitewashing the churches. The successors of Calvin doing away with the Eucharist down to a quarterly or less Lord's Supper. Bare bones theology of the sacraments. And Boyer says this all goes in the same direction of eventually having a pastor with an open Bible who's reinventing Christianity, who's representing himself and the church as if he started it all from scratch, and everything becoming more and more individualistic until finally Boyer says really it's the Quaker vision that prevails. No leadership, no sacraments, no tangible anything, just each person's direct experience with God admonishing everyone else in the same direction. The communal, historic, incarnational aspect of Christianity is actually, according to Boyer, despised within Protestantism. And the forces in Protestantism that he saw at work were going to make it even more shallow, even more ahistorical, even more arrogant in its individualism. And all I could say is two things. Number one, the book doesn't convince me to become a Catholic because there's obviously some major issues with justification and some major issues with authority and tradition and especially infallibility. And he may be true that the issues that were there at the Reformation have been addressed, but they've not been resolved on a theological level. The Reformation was necessary. But Boyer's critique, as it applies to evangelicals, is deadly on target. And we need to heed what he's saying. Post-evangelicalism says we need to go back to that larger, more ancient tradition, and we need to take from it the things that we need to be healthy. We need to get rid of this idea that we're reinventing everything, that we're starting from nothing, that we're the first generation to get it right, and all the other kinds of nonsense that Protestants sometimes say. Second critique is Paul Lewis Metzger, and he's a very recent author. His recent book is called Consuming Jesus. It's one of many books written recently dealing with evangelicalism as basically a consuming movement, a movement where religion, discipleship is all expressed in our use of stuff, our consumption of goods and services, buying things, materialistic expressions of God's favor and God's blessing. And of course, there, as I said, there are many books that are dealing with this. Some of them, like the McDonaldization of the Church, I think probably have a better overall critique of what it means that evangelicals have become a market niche, they've become a consumer niche, and they're unapologetic about the fact that they are shaping and reshaping evangelical Christianity into a consumer movement with a consumer identity, with a consumer conception of God and worship and so forth, that this is going on constantly. But Metzger says that there are prevailing sins in evangelicalism that are perpetuated precisely by this kind of consumerism. And he spends a good bit of time on racism, on evangelicalism as a white suburban phenomena, white suburban culture, and that the historic evil of racism and many other kinds of divisions between people are not addressed in an evangelicalism that's basically privatistic, that is all about what I like, what I want to wear, what I conceive a witness as being, and I think that if you take an honest assessment of what have we seen happen to evangelicals in the last 20 to 30 years, we cannot deny that our status as a high-profile consumer niche, market niche, has affected everything that we do and every way that we conceive of ourselves. We feel like we're a disciple when we've been to a conference and bought a book. We feel like we've been a witness when we wear a t-shirt or a bumper sticker and so forth. Well, the third critique of evangelicalism comes from Eugene Peterson, who's really spent a career arguing for what he calls the shape of pastoral integrity. Now, I discovered that phrase for the first time in his book, Working the Angles. And Peterson says that he has spent his entire career as a pastor seeking to know what it is to spiritually form people, to teach them to pay attention to the word and to pray, to teach them what it means to be disciples, to live in the Christian story, to live in the word, to live the word. And Peterson makes it pretty plain that the other two critiques have resulted in leaders who don't know what they're doing. Our leaders today are entrepreneurial, bureaucratic, technological. They are experts at selling the product, experts at spinning the product, so it looks like it is solving all sorts of problems and will solve all sorts of things if you'll just grab a hold of it right now. Peterson has been one of the most consistent critics of the loss of pastoral identity in terms of spiritual direction, shepherding people, teaching them basic formative spiritual influences. He has been a person, I think, who's been quite overlooked, associated with the message in the mind of a lot of people, and they haven't really read his work on pastoring. He would say that the loss of our connection to the larger Christian world and the embracing of this cultural motif of consumerism has led us now to be led by large groups of people who have absolutely no idea what we're even talking about when we, whenever we talk about spiritual direction and becoming disciples. And I used an illustration about a young pastor who tells his older members that if they want to sing hymns, they should just get out of the church, a church that they've belonged to for many decades, should get out of the church and go elsewhere. And I said, look at that pastor telling his older members that for just a moment. What's his conception of tradition? What's his conception of God? What's his conception of the purpose of the church? What's his conception of discipleship? And all of these things quickly unfold before you. As this is a guy who has embraced the church as an audience. Church growth is the greatest good. Who has certainly embraced the whole idea that if you don't like what we're selling, go someplace else and buy something. And is not even basing his relationships with the people in front of him on traditional pastoral identity, but on the identity of a salesman. If you don't like what I'm selling, you don't like what we're selling here at this store, then go someplace else where they have what you want. Peterson says this is what we've wound up with. We have very few people who understand the basic foundational aspects of being a pastor. All right, next time we're going to talk about what are our responses to the current state of evangelicalism from a post-evangelical perspective. I'm not going to give a lot of specifics, but I am going to give what I think are some very relevant, important, and helpful directions. Well, this has been Internet Monk Radio podcast number 103. And very glad that you are along. Hopefully the podcast will stay as regular as possible in the next few months. So I'm back on more of a regular schedule. You can find this podcast at internetmonk.com, where it's underneath the Internet Monk Radio tab there at the top. You can also find me at iTunes. Do a search under Monk, and lo and behold, there I am, number one out of two Monk themed podcasts. It's been great to spend this time with you. And just know that whoever you are out there in the evangelical wilderness, if you're wandering in the desert, if you're sitting at the circus, if you don't know where you are or you don't know where to turn, you are not alone. There are lots and lots of us. So until next time, this is Michael Spencer saying I'll see you.